Yeah. And talking about activating people, so allowing, for example, Gucci, they know that I'm a, that wallet is very rich. Are there ways for people to contact a wallet yet or not?
So yeah, well, it's interesting because a wallet in itself, not per se, right? So you don't have a means of sending a message or something. Yeah. But you know, something that I was just considering over the weekend was that I think you can send, for example, an NFT to a random address, which would open up, you know, all kinds of floodgates of NFT spam, in my opinion, right? So that gets known. It's like, well, let's just create a spam message and spam all kinds of ether with it, right? So,
okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So kids, don't spam, don't send NFTs to people you don't know, to wallets you don't know, okay?
Yeah, so perhaps we should consider building an NFT spam filter already, because I think there's going to be a market for that. Yeah.
So there you go. So for people looking for investments, you got a great idea here already.
Hi, welcome to Digital Explained to My Mom, the podcast that cuts through the marketing wah-wah. My name is Sultan Simlali. I'm a business consultant passionate about marketing and technology. A couple of months ago, I had a hard time explaining to my mom what I was doing in my day job. I struggled so much that she politely said, interesting. Would you like more coffee? Talking about an experience with friends and colleagues, I realized that I was not alone. This is why I have decided to go on a quest. Find a marketing professional that will be able to tell me who they are, what they do, in words my mom would understand. Enjoy the show.
So I'm super excited today to welcome Samuel Van Death, also known by some people as Sultan. I'll explain that joke later. Samuel brings more than 20 years in web and data business development. He's passionate about applying technology and data in marketing domain and at scale. So whenever you want to talk about AI, machine learning, blockchain, decentralized marketing, Web3, NFT, so all those words, Samuel speaks them. So that's really cool. He's currently marketing strategy director at Oracle. He has suffered having me as a colleague in two experiences at Adobe and Oracle. And we had there a colleague that used to mix our names. So he was sending email to Samuel, putting me in CC, and then he said, "Hey, Sultan," and he was doing the opposite. So it was very funny, and we still call each other by our opposite name. So cool to have you on the podcast, Sultan.
Thank you, Samuel. Great to be here. Yeah.
So today I wanted to chat with you on all the things we have seen around Web3, Metaverse, NFTs, all those words, and try to see whether you are up for the challenge to explain that in words my mom would understand. So let me kick things in. How would you describe actually Web3 to my mom?
Yeah, that is a great challenge. Thank you for that introduction, right? It seems that all the bullshit bingo words were covered in that one. So, and that's what I like about your show, right? It's trying to sort of cut through that bullshit layer and get to an understanding that, you know, everybody actually sort of get a grasp on what it really means. So thank you for the opportunity for me to try that. And that's not going to be easy. Because the majority of the people that I meet, and those are mostly in the digital marketing domain as well, they also don't fully, you know, understand what's happening with Web3 yet. If you talk about it, most people, they think, well, that has to do with those NFTs and those crazy people that spend millions on those scams, right? That's one of the people that people start to think. And then the other element is, well, something with metaverse, virtual worlds for geeks and nerds, you know, that don't want to meet in real life. But yeah, I believe it's something more than that. And I'm happy to drill into that in a little bit in this session.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah, because I think Facebook changed their names from Facebook to Meta. So I imagine that the metaverse is just Facebook.
Yeah, Yeah, but that is one of the misconceptions, right? That the metaverse, that is a project from Facebook, and that they will own the metaverse. And yeah. I think that is just the opposite of it, right? That we're actually building something that means less centralized ownership and less platforms. And if you break that down, right? So what is Web 3, right? Well, if you say Web 3, there must be a Web 2 and a Web 1. Well, you know, Web 1 was where things started with the World Wide Web, which was mostly just reading websites. Because if you wanted to write a website, you actually needed to be able to build code, right? So that's a barrier for a lot of people. Then with Web 2, we saw that it was easier to also write on the web. You could publish a blog post, you could respond and post on social networks, but it also meant that you did that through a third-party platform. So it was a huge time for platforms like Facebook, Uber, and Amazon to grow their business. But they grew that business mostly by centralizing value on the data and the content that people were bringing into that platform. Now, you know, what Web3 is sort of promising is that ownership is going to be brought back to the individuals. So making it easy for individuals to own digital assets like data, audiences, and content. And with that, you know, ensuring also the value that is created out of that is being brought back and shared across the users. So that's, for me, is the core concept of Web3, that decentralized value is going to be possible at scale for a lot of different users on the internet.
Okay. But so does that mean that everyone will have their own server in their basement where they store their own content? Is that how I need to envision that? Because that's sometimes the impression I get, like, yeah, so you had those websites far away, and then we all go to Facebook and post cat pictures on the Facebook site and people watch them, and now we own things. So do we need to own the computers, the machines, everything?
Because that would be Web 1, right? Where you were also able to sort of, you know, put your own server there and host your own website and your content and send that to the web. But yeah, that is a little bit complicated to do that for the majority of the people. So I don't think it's that, right? It's actually hosting things on the blockchain, which also now is still not easy to do, right? I think that's also fair to admit that for a lot of people, it is still difficult to work with a wallet, to try to transact on a blockchain. It's all not that easy yet. But the promises are there to make that technology more scalable if we make it easier for people to actually start using it.
Okay.
And that would mean that you would just interact in a way as you're used to within Web 2. The only difference is that the content and the data is not put on a central server or owned by a central company, but is actually put on the blockchain. And with that, you know, there's a decentralization of that data.
Okay. So it's like So kind of the real promise that we had with Facebook 14 years ago, like, yeah, it's the place where the entire world is coming together to share stuff. And that's how it was, I think, back in 2008, 2009. And then it became like Zuckerberg's private club, where in order to enter and to meet some girls, you need to pay hefty fees. And now we go back to bringing our own food to the same table. Yeah, it's more like a picnic, or you come together, everyone bring their food, they sit around the table, but we still own our own stuff. Is that a good way to describe it, or?
Yeah, still struggling? I think, you know, so what Facebook did, you know, super nicely is, right, that you had that ability to connect easy with a lot of people across the globe and, you know, communicate on different ways. The issue is that they are potentially the censor. Have a censorship over that connection, right? They own your access to those connections. And what we've seen, of course, is that, you know, if they change their policies, you are impacted heavily by that. For example, right, a lot of brands invested a lot of money to build a lot of fans on Facebook so that they could communicate with their fans through organic communication channel, which they earned. But then all of a sudden, Facebook changed the algorithm, and the reach that you had organically was almost gone, right? So the only way to then communicate with your audience was actually paying Facebook. And that is the right of a censor to do that, right?
Yeah.
So what blockchain brings is that we can do the same as Facebook is offering, but with removing the third party, so Facebook in that. Yeah. And that same applies to potentially, you know, a marketplace for goods, right? So Amazon or a truck platform like Uber. And there's a third party in there that has the right to change the rules. And with a blockchain, that rules are owned by the community, by the end users. So it's a different game.
Okay. Yeah, but what I still wonder is that still someone needs to pay, in a sense, for even though you keep your ownership, there are still some machines, there are still some code being written. Yeah, the whole thing needs to run. So who's going to pay for that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that is, you know, one of the things that, you know, we're still trying to solve. And I think that's why this is not settled by far, right? It's still very early. And we still need to see if this promise actually becomes reality. Because if you talk about decentralization, often it's not fully decentralization, right? If you take Ethereum, which is, you know, being called, you know, the most, you know, the internet computer, and a lot of different applications are being built on top of that. But then there is still a relatively low amount of companies who are actually hosting that blockchain. And if you then look at, you know, what's the technology they're applying to host that blockchain, it's a lot of Amazon Web Services actually behind that. So if Amazon Web Services would say, well, you know, we don't want Ethereum anymore, then all of a sudden Ethereum is down because there's one sensor, one centralized piece in that value chain, which could be Amazon Web Services. So I think there is the ideal, the promise, and then there's a way to get there to make sure that you really get into a fully decentralized world. And of course, you know, if you talk about funding that, there needs to be part of in it where the creators, the brands, and the community are all being incentivized to build it together. But I think, you know, that can be done, right? If you just look at the insane valuations of Facebook and Amazon and others, you see there's a lot of value. And right now it goes to one single entity. If you spread that across the different stakeholders that can become part of that communities, I think there's a lot of money that can be invested to build that.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's so we're still looking for the way to build a financial model around actually making that work.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So if you got some projects, right, where you see that, for example, you know, if they are about to release an NFT, right, then a part of that project is sort of put aside for the creator of that NFT, right? So they get a portion of it. But then the rest of it, that is, you know, open for the community to acquire. And of course, you know, with that portion, they have an incentive to build it and also to make it grow. So I think that kind of, there are definitely models to monetize, working on with blockchain.
Okay. So talking about NFT, so NFT, non-fungible tokens, meaning it's a digital asset, but with a signature to make sure that, hey, I got the real stuff. Okay, that's good. So I get NFTs, that's good. But besides those bored apes and those ridiculous images that you could buy for $50,000, where I still don't know what you can do with that, what do you see as usage of NFT technology? I don't know, in art or other stuff, how can we use NFTs?
Yeah, I think NFTs are really exciting, right? So if you look at blockchain, right, there's two things to do with blockchain. If you sort of, you know, make it very easy, you got the crypto coins, right? Digital currencies, where every element is the same, right? It's like one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin. It's just the same element, like euro is a euro. But with NFTs, it's unique, right? Each of the tokens is unique. So that makes it more accessible for a lot of different potential use cases. So think about your NFT that represents your own identity. So a unique digital identity can be owned as part of an NFT. It can be used for concert tickets, right? So that's another way. or digital artwork, or any kind of intellectual property can be tied to an NFT. Gated content, proof of achievement and skills, profile pictures, domain names, usernames, voting, crowdfunding. There's so much in-game assets, counterfeit, fit protection, supply chain transparency. It's all these things where you need to track a unique element where NFTs can become part of. So it really opens up a lot of use cases. I think, you know, what is exciting that, you know, the art world has sort of embraced that first, because now you get a good mix of technology with artists. And I think that creates a community around it, which creates a different kind of vibe around the technology. And you see that, you know, a particular kind of language around NFTs is being spoken with all kinds of nice words. And this sub-community is really driving the technology forward as well.
Okay. Yeah, so we could imagine that I'm an artist. I make some paintings. I could sell digital copies of my artwork. And we could know that the digital art that I created is the original one, is not a JPEG. Just regular image that someone copied on the website. Could that be like an application of that, or does it go beyond that?
Yeah, I think that is the basic application, right? That is how it sort of got popular over the last year or so, where indeed artists are creating digital art. Mm-hmm. Bored Ape Yacht Club, you already mentioned it, those crazy monkeys, which you can buy. And that's a unique representation. And with the NFT comes some form of ownership rights. Mm-hmm. And I think that is still very premature, because you see different projects have different kind of ownership attached to it, right? Can you use it commercially as well if you own an NFT, or is it just usage rights? That can all be depending on how the NFT is actually transacted. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't stop there, right? So to give the example of, for example, counterfeit protection, right? So if you buy, let's say, a Gucci bag, and it comes with an NFT supplied by Gucci, then once you want to sell your Gucci bag, you can also connect it to the NFT. And the NFT sort of ensures that, you know, your buyer actually knows that it's a real Gucci bag, right? Because you actually have the NFT given by Gucci, which was connected to that specific bag.
Oh, yeah. That's really cool. So you are really able to manage counterfeit goods, and that's a pretty interesting application, I think, for brands. And I would also imagine that if I am an artist and I have created like something that works well, I could also imagine that I would take a cut on every time my art is being resold. Like, okay, I'm creating this fantastic, I don't know, I created this fantastic box, Captain America. So I created this one, you buy it from me, and then if you want to resell it and make a profit on it, we could also imagine that I would take a cut of that profit. And so allow artists to live better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that is also, you know, the way that the art, right, like Bored Ape Yacht Club, right? So every time it's sold through, there are royalties still for the original creator of the Bored Ape Yacht Clubs.
Oh, yeah.
They get a cut actually of the resale price.
Yeah.
So that's interesting for these artists, right? But now let's take BMW, right? So they sell a car to you and they have an NFT with that. So after you've driven that for five years, you actually sell it to me, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I also get the NFT with that, of course, with that car. Now, BMW, you know, actually knows some more about their secondary market, which is information they don't usually have, because they only know the original buyer of the car. So also there you see, you know, lots of use cases around secondary ownership and the data that provides for the original producer of a good through, you know, a connected NFT with that physical item.
Yeah. So it's really a kind of a direct to consumer tool actually in building relationship with not only the first buyer, but the second, the third, the fourth, and so on.
Yeah, so yeah. You know, I once joked on Twitter that, you know, NFTs are the new CRM, right? So yeah. It's sort of that's a little bit to hype it, of course. But there's a lot of, you know, yeah, nice things you can do with that, right? And I just gave you one example.
Yeah.
The other one could be, right, so let's go back to the Gucci bag, right? So I sell very expensive Gucci bags. I've got an NFT with that. So NFT is free, or, you know, at least not as expensive as the Gucci bag itself. But once the NFT is minted on that wallet address, you also know how much liquidity that wallet actually has, right? So how much Ether is on that wallet, right? Or how much Bitcoin is connected to that wallet. So now you know, well, is this wallet actually, does it have enough liquidity to buy the real Gucci bag as well? So it gives you some insights in, yeah, the liquidity of the wallet owner behind the NFT.
Oh, okay.
Which, yeah, of course, kind of, you know, comes you to the, you think, oh, is that, you know, is that privacy compliant? Do you want that?
Yeah, but at the same time, a wallet is a code. So it's not necessarily attached to a person.
No.
So you, the only way to show that the wallet is yours, you probably need to have kind of a passphrase and codes and showing that actually, yeah. But that's kind of still kind of creepy, your example. I think like I'm buying something and then it allows the brand to take a look into my wallet and look how much money I have.
Yeah, it's not because, you know, because the blockchain is public, right? It's you can look it up. You can put a wallet address on the blockchain. You can look at, you know, how much coins does that wallet address actually has. So it's not only accessible for the brand, it's publicly accessible data actually. Yeah. And you know, yes, you know, I agree with you. It perhaps sounds a little bit scary, but what I like about it is that as an end user, you have the controls, right? You could buy it with any wallet address, right? As you say, it's not per se associated with me as a person. So you could stay fully anonymous if you would like to. Mm-hmm. But you can also, you know, make yourself known. You can attach an email address to it. You can even, you know, create a particular wallet address, which, yes, and defines your name as well. So there's also ways to connect your name to it. So, but in the end, you as an end user are controlling that instead of the brand controlling your data, you control it yourself.
Yeah. And talking about activating people. So allowing, for example, Gucci, they know that that wallet is very rich. Are there ways for people to contact a wallet yet or not?
So. Yeah, well, it's interesting because a wallet in itself, not per se, right? So you don't have a means of sending a message or something. Yeah. But you know, something that I was just considering over the weekend was that I think you can send, for example, an NFT to a random address, which would open up, you know, all kinds of floodgates of NFT spam, in my opinion, right? So that's known. It's like, well, let's just create a spam message and spam all kinds of ether with it, right? So,
So, kids, don't spam. Don't send NFTs to people you don't know, to wallets you don't know, okay?
Yeah, so perhaps we should consider building an NFT spam filter already, because I think there's going to be a market for that. Yeah.
So, there you go. So, for people looking for investments, you got a great idea here already. Okay, that's cool. So we had...
But of course, so going back to your question, right? So of course, you know, what a lot of companies do, or creators of NFTs do, is that they first create a whitelist, right? So meaning you need to subscribe to get access to minting an NFT. And to do that, you need to connect your wallet to your email address.
Okay.
Right. And then they have a communication, right? So, but yeah. In the end, you as a user then needs to sort of think, well, yeah, I'm okay with this company having, you know, my email address and my wallet address together, but yeah.
Okay. So let's go back to minting. What does minting mean?
Yeah, good question. So minting, what it means is putting associating the NFT, so the unique token, to a specific wallet address.
Okay.
And minting is the process of the first time that that unique token is connected to a wallet address.
Okay. It's like the first time they meet. Yeah. The first time they mint. Okay.
It's connected to minting of coins, right? It was the first time that a coin is actually being made. That is the minting process, but then for an NFT. So the NFT is for the first time connected to a wallet.
Okay. Yeah, I'm learning a lot now. It's a kind of a crash course into that. So we talked about the cultural aspect, the NFT world and everything. Web3, kind of the vision of where it goes. I'd like to jump back to like the whole metaverse thing. So you see, I'm a hipster. I have my VR headset, but I'm still struggling with the real, besides gaming, how do you see the metaverse, if that exists? Actually, this might be the first question, but if there is one thing as the metaverse, but how do you see the real time or real life implications of the metaverse thing?
Yeah, and I think the way you address it is how most people think about it, right? That you need to wear those 3D glasses, and that's what when you enter the metaverse. But I heard this nice explanation of that you could define it as a galaxy, right? Within a galaxy, you have a lot of different planets, right? So you have a planet called Meta, owned by Facebook, and that's a world on itself, right? Which you can go into. Got a visual representation layer, all kinds of countries in there as well, etc. But you also have another planet, right? For example, Decentraland, right? Also a 3D world, but fully decentralized, right? So it's not owned by, there's one centralized organization behind it, but all of the assets in there are decentralized owned. And I think the vision of the metaverse then is that the end user, they can take assets they own in one world, let's say Decentraland, and can take it to Meta, right? So it's interoperable, right? So you can own, for example, your profile picture or your avatar, and you can take it from the one planet to the other planet, and it also has the same clothes or assets connected to it. And with that, it becomes more of a 3D visual representation of the internet, right? With all the content and the assets you can own on the internet as well.
Okay. But that interoperability, interconnectivity between the worlds does not exist.
No.
I mean,
No. So again, it's a future vision, right? So, and I think the real concept of the metaverse as we would like it to be, as just described, where as an end user, you own your own assets, you can take it from one world to the other. That's the dream. But it's going to take a lot of years to get there. And then, of course, it's also the 3D visualization layer. There's a lot of technology still that needs to be built to make that scalable, right? Most of the environments you can't be together with more than 1,000 people. While, in theory, you want to host a concert with, 2 million people or something, and then, it should work. And that's still very difficult to really have that on a single server.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's almost impossible. But I think the fact, and I read someone saying that, it's weird. Some people find it weird and strange that the big evil, so we always have like a big evil in tech. It used to be Microsoft, now it's Facebook, that they're investing a lot in the metaverse. But he was saying, at the same time, because of the scale and the money they have, they can look at scalability issues and how we'll be able to do this 1 million people attending the same concert. So there are pros and cons. If you would look for yourself, how would you like this world to be like in 10, 20 years? I mean, how would you like to see this whole Web3, metaverse, NFT, bingo?
I think, it would be great if, it's not just a technology shift, but there's also a cultural shift connected to it. And that's okay. One of the things that I recently became to appreciate by, you know, diving into it myself in a deep way, is that what you see in a lot of the Web3 projects, that there's actually a big community drive behind it, right? So, well, Discord, you know, is this it used to be a gaming tool, but it's now being used a lot actually to build communities around NFT projects. Mm-hmm. And there's really a sense of community in the fact that, you know, people sharing a lot of information, they want to make sure that there's equal pay for anyone, right? So that really Web3 stands for win, win, win. Mm-hmm. That the creator gets good money out of the project. The community, you know, is getting a stake because they have an NFT mm-hmm. ownership out of the project. And companies can actually earn something. And I think, you know, for example, the Adidas project, where they bought Bored Ape, and then they created more content around their own Bored Ape with that, is a great example of that. Because they really try to understand the community, they try to speak the same language, and they were not just selling their products with that, but they actually try to engage with that community and deliver more content in that community. And they also support that community in a financial way by actually buying an NFT themselves as well. So yeah, if it can be that cultural shift where it's not the platforms owning, you know, the majority of the benefits, or the brands just owning all the data, but there's really a win-win-win, I think that will be a great vision to work towards, at least.
Yeah, amen. I like that. I like that. So it could be a rebalancing act for a lot of the economy and societal impact thanks to that technology. So
I think you know, because the whole basis of it has already been around for a while, for blockchain, and people who've been in blockchain, you know, they usually say, well, you know, this is not something new. And then say, yeah, well, it's true, right? The technology is not new. But what you see, because it's now being embraced by the cultural elements of society as well, is that it's getting a new perspective. And I think that is very interesting, because when culture and technology sort of collide, I think you get interesting things out of that. That's also because why I think that marketing is now stepping up in this NFT project, because marketing usually thrives from that combination of technology and culture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, because you often indeed have those trends where artists are launching something and then marketing can act as an accelerator and push actually the thing forward. And artists and technologists actually are working hand in hand in those, in those aspects. Yeah. Yeah. I just hope that, but that's more of a personal note, and that we don't fall back on kind of the hangover we have from web 2.0, you know, like, it's going to save the world, the Arab revolution, thanks to Facebook and Twitter. And then at the end of the day, these companies went public and they're worth billion. And we see some impact of those technologies now in politic discourse in America, for example, or in other countries. So it's always a thin line, and I hope we'll go towards probably the bright side of the force.
Yeah, no, I fully agree, right? I think we all had that feeling with Web 2. It opened up a lot of global communication, so the world would be able to communicate better, and therefore we would be able to get along better. Well, I think that was a little bit of a dream indeed, right? If you see all the filter bubbles and polarization happening. There's definitely a risk for that, right? I think that everybody working on Web3 should be aware of that. There's a risk that it goes the same direction again. I put my hope out of the fact that I think, you know, if you look at what freedom is, right? Freedom is to be able to express yourself without censorship, right? So without a censor sort of being able to stand between you and somebody else. And in the core, that is what... Well, the only way to do that even is with blockchain technology, right? It's the only technology that we invented up to now that opens up the way to directly communicate with others and transact with others in a safe way. And, you know, having some consensus on that actually was a transaction in a decentralized way, right? Without that third party in there. So yeah, I think that's just very exciting that that technology is there now, is being embraced by cultural worlds. It's getting more volume because marketing is sort of getting in the loop. And now we need to make sure that people start embracing it in the right ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And so for, on a closing note, what would you advise people working in marketing or in other areas to think about or to look at when it comes down to Web3 broadly?
Yeah, so I think the good thing now already is that, you know, we have over 200 brands, you know, already launched NFT campaigns. You know, so there's already a lot of use cases out there which you can just look at and see how what they did, right? And there are examples on how not to do it, and there is also some good examples out there. So that's definitely a good starting point, right? But just looking at what is being done, that would be my starting point. A lot of this data is also publicly because it's on the blockchain. So as you can see, that Nike already made 185 million out of their NFTs of some crazy value. But the other thing is, and I think that's the softer side of it, right, that you need to understand if you want to do this right, you need to actually build a community. Mm-hmm. And building a community, that is very much, yeah, human work, right? You need, and that's where also the artists come in, right? They provide a medium to connect to your community. And that means in the end that you need to create that win-win-win, right? So with an artist, creator who creates cool stuff that your audience actually wants to own, where they want to be part of, then finding a good way to get that community excited. And then when if that community gets excited and involved and you listen to them, then you actually publish something and make sure that you keep adding value along the road as well. Yeah. So if you do it like that, right, and not as just, you know, one-off commercial stunt, I think it's going to be a lot of value for the for any marketer as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes absolutely sense. So a lot of things happening. We are in the early stages and there will be a lot of acceleration, I think. So
yeah, I think it's a common phrase within Web3, and that's people saying we are still early. So I think that's very true. Yeah. That provides a lot of opportunity, but also a lot of risks. Yeah. And I think that's where we are now.
Yeah. So the advice would be read, learn, try to understand, but don't spend $200,000 in a Bored Ape drawing with an NFT attached to it, unless you have like 20 million, but I would say do something else with your money. That's my...
Yeah, I think that's sound advice, Sultan.
Okay, so if you need any other financial advice, feel free to reach out. So so thank you so much, Samuel, for taking the time to have this conversation today. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot of things. I hope the listeners listen to. If you want to engage with Samuel, you can find him on Twitter, on LinkedIn. I'll provide his details as part of the show notes. Samuel, thank you so much. Have a great day. And I'll speak to you all very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me, King Sultan. See you next time.
Bye. Bye, Sultan.
Bye, Samuel.